And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 730. As we continue our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the fantasy baseball season, we head to Wrigleyville, to the Chicago Cubs, one of the teams that I like to root for because, hey, they're fun for fantasy purposes, and Wrigley's awesome, and I'm going to ask a question out the gate once we get started here. But to help me break this down, she's been nice enough to join me every year for this preview. I've had the privilege of being on her show as well. It's been awesome. She writes a lot over at Bleed Cubbies Blue because she bleeds Cubby Blue. That's what she does. She also writes at baseballhq.com. She's a co-host of the awesome Pitcher List podcast, The Fantasy Feud, with our good friend Shelly V. And you can find her on Blue Sky at bcbsarah.bsky.social. Sarah Sanchez, how are we doing, my friend?
I am doing as well as can be expected here in 2025, and thrilled to join you to talk about the Cubs because I could use some baseball chatter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, baseball chatter is always important. What I want to ask you at the gate, I saw on social media today, we are recording a little earlier than this release, of course, the Cubs made quite the improvement to center field. I saw that thing. Everyone goes, I want to sit in the bleachers, or I want to sit here, I want to go on the rooftops. Now you can get like a mini, it's almost like a suite in theory in center field. That looks pretty darn cool.
It does look cool. I'm actually a little nervous about this because it's right where the batter's eye has, it's Ooh. Like the area right above the batter's eye. And Wrigley has been like the batter's eye area hasn't changed for years, right? You've kind of got that ivy that runs up to that black, it's actually kind of like an enclosed area there where it's another little club area of sorts. And so depending on exactly where this club is, I don't know what that does to hitters' vision as they're seeing the ball. And I'm sure they've thought this through, but all of the renderings I've seen so far just describe where it's at, and they don't show the whole thing relative to the batter's eye. So one thing to keep an eye on with the Cubs this year is if the batter's eye changes how hitters do in that park.
That's a great point, especially with all the day games. People could have like glaring sunglasses or something. There's a bunch of goofy potential things there, but you get a great seat, all you can eat and drink. Like, what could go wrong? What could
come to Chicago? We'll get some yard seats. I think that's what they're calling it. They're calling it the yard.
It looks so awesome. Like, I love Wrigley. It's been a long time since I've been there. I get like reminders on Facebook of when I went, and I'm like, I was a lot younger then, but I would love to go back. That's for darn sure. All right, the usual first question I ask every guest before we start talking players on the team is, what were your overall thoughts on the 2024 season as it ended for the Chicago Cubs?
I mean, the big takeaway for me here, so they won 83 games, they just missed the playoffs. The exact same thing that happened in 2023, 83 wins, just missed the playoffs. And from my perspective, Jed Hoyer didn't do enough to improve this team. Prior to the 2024 offseason, there were some bullpen holes that were pretty glaring. The offense really never got going. I mean, they had a really solid April, and then everything fell off a cliff. And we can talk about why that was. It actually was a park effect situation, which is part of why my mind is on, like, if you're changing the park and you just had a weird park effect year, what does that do? But I think that Jed Hoyer's theory of the case going into 2024 was that he could bring in Craig Counsell and eke out five more wins with functionally the same roster. And I kind of thought that might be true, and it was not true. That roster was an 83-win team, period, the end. So they made some bigger moves this year. I'm glad they did, but I sort of feel like Jed Hoyer might be on the hot seat.
What were those park factors you were mentioning? There's out of curiosity, like I'm trying to think off the top of my head what they did differently. I think they might have a scoreboard change.
But, no, they didn't change anything. It was almost entirely the weather. And this was a huge topic of conversation at Cubs convention. But I did a piece for FTN Fantasy for their draft guide looking at park effects. Wrigley Field last year, single year park effect. Now, admittedly, you don't care that much about a single year park effect for purposes of the ballpark, but you do if it impacted a bunch of guys' stats from 2024. Yeah. And in this case, it did. It went from playing as a fairly middle of the road offensive park, which is what it's been most years, to the worst hitting environment in baseball outside of Seattle. Wow. Its park factor moved down by like a negative 10 based on the rankings that they use over there at StatCast. And it was particularly pernicious for left-handed hitters. So if you go look at the splits for a guy like Cody Bellinger home and away, or a guy like Michael Bush home and away, I mean, they just got they got wrecked at Wrigley Field. And I was just at Cubs Con over Martin Luther King weekend, and the players and coaches were talking about how demoralizing it was. Every day they would like get to the park and the wind would be howling in their face again. It was a mental challenge for the players in addition to being a literal physical challenge. But so if you think of some of those guys who underperformed last year, didn't hit their home run marks, didn't quite get it going at home, there's a lot of guys I'm interested in on the hitting side. And the reverse of that, a lot of Cubs pitchers were excellent at Wrigley Field last year, and I just don't think that's going to hold up. Like Jameson Taillon got a huge bump pitching those games at Wrigley Field, right? The only guy who didn't have pronounced pitching splits at Wrigley in the starting rotation was Justin Steele.
Okay. Yeah, especially if you said it affects lefties more than righties, you probably face more righties. Curious, just out of curiosity's sake, we don't have to go deep in it. How affected was Shota?
Shota was affected, but it wasn't terrible. I think that I don't have the numbers immediately in front of me, but it was like from like a 2.7 FIP to like a 3.03 FIP. And the home, it wasn't like a huge home run boost or anything. But the big concern about Shota coming over was that how many home runs is he going to give up? And if Wrigley was playing super pitcher friendly for home runs last year, which it was, like everything says it was, I would anticipate the show is going to see a little bit of a reversion to the mean there.
And you said most of it was weather based. There's like nothing we can really prognosticate for this season based on that. So hopefully we get more offense and our pitchers survive, I guess, is the best.
Yeah, way that's it. Yeah. Yep.
All right, let's talk about those bats. Let's get started here, and we'll go use pretty much for if people at home haven't figured it out yet, pretty much just go down roster resource. And we're going to use NFBC Draft Champions ADP starting on January 11th. It covers about the last 10 Draft Champions drafts. And we're going to start with Ian Happ, a guy that for a while there was like, is he going to hit for average or power? Average or power? He's kind of looks like he's into his power with a okay rest of the profile, like pretty good profile. And right now, if you want to draft Ian Happ, ADP is around 135 to 140, somewhere in that bubble. So what are our thoughts on Ian Happ entering this season?
Perfectly serviceable corner outfielder. I mean, I think that the Cubs have an above average outfield across the board with Happ, with Kyle Tucker, with Pete Crow Armstrong. It's hard to go wrong with any of those guys. Happ has sort of settled into this space where he's like a 120 WRC plus dude. You're going to get 25 home runs. He's not going to steal a ton of bases. He does hit low in the lineup, so you're probably going to get reasonably good counting stats. I would anticipate those counting stats being better now that Kyle Tucker is also on the team. But yeah, he's just been super consistent. And the thing that I noticed about Happ last year, he was not one of the guys who was terribly impacted home versus away. And I think that had to do more with approach than anything else. The hitting coaches and pitching coaches at PitchCon, I got PitchCon on the brain because that's this weekend, at CubsCon, were really impressed with how he didn't change his approach and he was just super steady. I think you could do a lot worse than a guy who's kind of reminds me a little bit of Brian Reynolds, right? Like it's not flashy and it's not exciting, but you're going to get a ton of plate appearances and it's not going to hurt you.
The Reynolds is a great comp. Like Reynolds is almost a little more vanilla, but maybe not because Reynolds goes like 30 picks in front of Happ, which is fine. I'd rather have Ian Happ than Brian Reynolds. I guess Reynolds has a better batting average, but other than that, pretty much identical across the board. So I'm with you there. You mentioned his name a few times. One of my favorite players in all of fantasy land. I've been like all in on Kyle Tucker year after year. I'm all there. I have pushed the chips in yet again. I do not care that he's playing. I really didn't think it factored much to me. But you mentioned earlier some new acquisitions this year. You brought in the big man, Kyle Tucker. ADP is coming in around 9 right now. How are we feeling about Tucker's first year in Chicago?
It's going to be lit. And I'm actually not worried about the lefty problem. So left-handed hitters have complained that it's harder to hit at Wrigley for years. I don't think that it's going to be difficult for Kyle Tucker. He's not the type of lefty who's going to miss the wall. If you recall, it's got like that cutout in the outfield in right and left. And so if you don't have real power, you can lose some home runs to that cutout. But Kyle Tucker has real power. I think he's going to be a star at Wrigley Field. I'm honestly just, I want to know why the Cubs haven't extended him yet. Like I'm so excited to have Kyle Tucker playing in right field at Wrigley. And I think he's going to make the whole lineup around him better hitting in that two hole where he just doesn't strike out very much and he takes a ton of walks, right? Like last year he walked 16.5% of the time and he only struck out 15.9% of the time. That is a big improvement for your two hole guy over Ian Happ, who we were just talking about, 12.2% walk rate and 25.6% strikeout rate. You'd much rather push Happ down a bit, let Kyle Tucker take those at bats. And yeah, I think it's going to be great.
Yep. All about the Tucker train. So love seeing him land there. Now you go to Seiya Suzuki. You already mentioned, we'll talk about Pete Crow later, but you have Happ, you have Tucker, you got Suzuki in the Armstrong in the outfield. So, and the Cubs came out and said that over the weekend, like you mentioned at CubsCon, that's the outfield and Suzuki is actually okay with being the primary DH for the most part. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes. But you got Seiya right now coming in with an ADP of 92, and it's basically been oblique injuries to start each of the last two seasons that's derailed him. Still finishes with good seasons. How are we feeling on him in 2025?
I actually think Seiya is criminally underrated. So there were a bunch of Boston fans on the social media this year who were like, oh, we should trade for Seiya Suzuki. And then they're listing like, oh, what's his name? Not Emmanuel Valdez, Willier Abreu. They're like, Willier Abreu. I'm like, absolutely not. No. Seiya Suzuki is an elite hitter. He put up a 138 WRC plus last year, but that's just what he does. He's like in that territory where he is a 30% better than average hitter across the board. And he's better when he DHs and when he doesn't play the field. Like, I know he wants to play the field because he's a competitor, but he is a guy who does not fall off when he DHs. He's totally fine coming off the bench, taking those at bats and going back to the bench. The one thing about Seiya, I don't think that he's ever going to have like quite the stolen base potential that he should for his speed. He's a faster player than his stolen base numbers indicate, but you're still going to get 20 home runs. You're still going to get 15-ish bags, and he's going to hit in the middle of that lineup, which will be a lot of fun.
Yep, I am a lot of Seiya as well. Like, I find myself with a lot of Cubs this season, so that's fun. It works for me. Another guy, I love his ADP right now, Dansby Swanson. It was a horrific start to the year. Like, people, I know I dropped him in a 12-team league at one point, finished incredibly strong, and then all of a sudden has surgery right after the season. Like, that was, unless, you know, maybe they talked about it in your neck of the woods. Out here, we didn't hear a thing about an injury like that that required surgery, and then boom, it happens. And then they reported it a month later to top it off, not even when it happened. So right now, you can get Swanson ADP 172. How are you feeling about a bounce back here for Dansby Swanson?
I love a bounce back for Dansby, and we knew that he was dealing with something, but we didn't know what. It wasn't ever broadcast that it was anything other than just wear and tear. I think it was like a hernia situation, yes. Right? Yep. And so you can imagine how that sort of is affecting his swing and how it's affecting his ability to move around. He is a elite defensive shortstop. He's not going anywhere in the lineup. He's going to play every single day that he's healthy. Last season was, in my opinion, an outlier for him. And he's another one of those guys. I think he's just going to get better having Kyle Tucker around. You know, when the Cubs signed Dansby Swanson originally, I remember saying that he's the type of guy you want to be the third or fourth best player on your team. He's not the guy who should be the headliner for the whole team. And I think the last couple of years, Bellinger wasn't that much better than him. He like really had to be the guy. And this lets him sort of slot back into that role where he can be one of the supporting characters as opposed to the main character. And I think he thrives in that role, as we saw with when he was in Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm with you. And it was just weird for me with the injury situation because he played better as the season was coming to an end. So it's like, what's going on here? But I'm with you. The dude's a baller, hits in the middle of the order of a very good order. I like where we're getting him at. He's going much, much later because of the kind of awkward season. Injury related, most likely, as you mentioned. So I'm with you there as well.
Well, and it's back-to-back injury seasons for Dansby. Yeah. So I know everybody was kind of down on him coming into last year too. He had been dealing with a heel contusion for most of 2023. So if Dansby is healthy, and I have no reason to believe he's not, 2024 will be like his first fully healthy season with the Cubs. And I wouldn't be surprised if you saw him jump back up to like a 260 batting average, a 270 batting average. And like I said, he plays every single day.
Yeah, because he goes in a really interesting range where it's like Swanson, Jeremy Pena, Mason Wynn. They're all kind of going around each other. So it's a very, very, like, I don't mind taking two of those guys if you want type thing. If you wait, they're all very suitable.
I like that pocket too.
Michael Bush, it happened. The Dodgers finally let him go so he could play. and the Cubs let him play, and oh my goodness, he hit 21 home runs and hit almost 250. My goodness, it was possible in that bat. Bush ADP is almost 255 this year. And I get it. You know, there's maybe, can he do it again? Question. There's always the platoon risk, even though he played 152 games last year, but that's a question that's been mentioned. So what are your thoughts on Michael Bush hitting 2025?
I mean, the platoon risk is real. So one of the rumors that keeps coming out of the front office here in Wrigleyville is that they're still potentially interested in a right-handed first base bat, which drives me crazy because I don't know how Michael Bush is supposed to get better against lefty pitching if he doesn't see it. And there's nothing in his profile that leads me to believe he's destined for a platoon. But here's the plus side. I don't really think that they've gone out and tried to trade for that bat, and they don't really have it in-house. There's not somebody coming who is going to be the platoon partner for Michael Bush. There's not really anybody obvious for that role. So I think he's going to get a lot of run. Hopefully his splits will improve a tiny bit. I'm with you on the power. It was legit and wonderful. And I actually think he gets better this year, not worse. So I love him where he's going in drafts right now. I have him on a couple of teams.
Yeah, no, I love me some Shaw. Good late round pick, fun in DCs. Can do a lot with him. And preach, because I think if I have longtime listeners of the show are probably annoyed how often I say young players need to face the opposite hand, so they are the same hand, so they actually can tell me that they can't hit them. Don't just assume they can't hit them on a small sample. I get so frustrated when people tell me that, but because that was the Brandon Belt thing for years. It just bugged me in San Francisco.
And a lot of the guys who Michael Bush was losing those at bats to last season are gone. So he would frequently, like, Tauchman would pinch hit in a situation, or Patrick Wisdom would pinch hit in a situation, and they would, like, do some shenanigans and stuff. So I understood why they were doing that with those particular players. Tauchman is also, like, just an on-base machine. And so late in a game, if you really needed a guy to get on base, like, pinch hitting for Bush sort of made sense. Patrick Wisdom is obviously, like, a huge right-handed power threat. And so I sort of understood why they would do that, but it was so aggravating to watch. Those guys are not on the roster anymore. There's really nobody coming to platoon with Michael Bush. So I think it's his job, as long as he doesn't slump too badly at the start of the year.
Hopefully it stays that way. Nico Hoerner, I'm really looking forward to hearing your thoughts here, because Nico Hoerner had a down season, but he was kind of banged up as well. Finished with 7 homers and 31 steals at 273. Like, all in all, not too far off the normal Nico. Maybe you got a little better batting average and more steals, but still a good season. But he's had the shoulder injury. I believe he had surgery. Looks like he won't start the season. That seems pretty normal. What are you hearing in this regard? Because a lot of the concerns has dropped his ADP to 211. But if you are, like, in a draft and hold format where you can stash him, is it worth it? Like, all those kind of questions. So where are you sitting on Nico Hoerner right now?
That's a great question. I go back and forth on this. So at CubsCon, Carter Hawkins and Jed Hoyer were asked about Nico Horner's health and whether he was going to be ready to start the season. And Carter had sort of this cheeky answer where he was like, have you asked Nico that question? Because he would like to be informed that he's not going to be ready to start the season. Like, as if, of course, Nico's ready to play. But we also found out he hadn't been doing any baseball activities. He hasn't thrown or anything at this point in time. And so he's going to be building up from scratch during spring training, and then the Cubs go out and sign John Birdie to a 1-year deal. So just reading between the tea leaves there, I sort of think that Nico's probably going to get a slow start and be back sometime in mid-April or May. There's nothing that's come out from the team that officially says that. They say he's going to be ready. I just am skeptical.
Okay. Would you be willing to take him at 211, or is there too much up in the air to take that chance?
I would take him as, like, my middle infielder, okay, knowing that I could put somebody else in that spot if I had to. I would also, I mean, he's a great pick at 211 because he did still steal 31 bases last season. And that was after a slow start on the stolen base department, because he had been dealing with, like, a hamstring issue or something. And so I think Nico's still a threat to steal 40 bases, 50 bases. He still has an above average batting average, but I'm a little concerned with the timeline. I think we're going to learn a lot about his health when spring training starts.
100%. Folks, we are just around the corner from that. So get ready for a lot of, whoa, this guy's hurt and I've been drafting him for 3 months. That's coming, folks. Be ready for all of that fun. Pete Crow Armstrong, as the cool kids like to say, PCA, is it was a very welcome to the big season for him. It was, he comes up, kind of gets told, like shown, hey, this is the big leagues kid. Goes back, works on things, comes back a couple times, made those trips. Then we saw improvements towards the end, and the defense is legit as it comes. That series in LA, I remember that clearly. Robin balls and stuff. I had that game. I remember where I was watching that. That was awesome. Like, he was putting on a show. So that just kind of like cemented him with the team. So now he's got his job. It's his to lose, essentially. I'd be shocked if he did. Like, I don't think he will. ADP, though, is 136. It is continually climbing this draft season. It is on the move. Where are we sitting on PCA? Because for me, I like the talent. Don't know if I can pay the price yet. That's like an Ian Happ price.
Yeah, it is. And it's not necessarily an Ian Happ skill set. So with PCA, you're getting a ton of speed. And honestly, if you look at the improvements to his batting average in the second half, you can talk yourself into it. So in the first half, he really slumped. As you mentioned, he hit 203. In the second half, he hit 262, which is a lot more palatable. But what you're really getting with PCA is just a stolen base machine. I think he got caught stealing one time last season, maybe twice. Like, it was, he just can run and run and run and run. He scores a lot more runs than you would think he would, because he can score. If he's on base, he can basically score. He had an inside the park home run last year that I believe was clocked as the fastest inside the park home run in the Statcast era since Byron Buxton in like 2015 or 2014. We're talking like peak Byron Buxton. So it's a speed average package, and you're hoping on the average with the county stats thrown in. I don't know that I like him at that ADP, because there's some guys there that I like more. But if you're looking for stolen bases, you could do a lot worse. And the defense is going to keep him on the field.
All righty. Now it looks like you might have a rookie making a debut. He had a massive, windfall winter for Team USA. It just blew up social media every time he took the field, it felt like. Now it looks like it's his job to lose. Even the brass in the Cubs front office said he'll get every chance to do it. We're talking about Matt Shaw now. So you got a Michael Bush and a Matt Shaw. And I always like think they're the same person when I talk about them. But what are we thinking here? Because ADP 212, that's another one that's just been going bonkers since news has come out. But like, the skill sets we saw throughout the minors last year were amazing. First time with the big league club, there's always going to be questions. So how do you feel on Matt Shaw?
I love Matt Shaw. And what he did in the Premier 12 tournament was like so impressive. He put up numbers in those games that have not been seen on Team USA since Ken Griffey Jr. I'm not telling y'all he's Ken Griffey Jr. I don't think Matt Shaw is destined for Cooperstown someday, but that's quite the show to put on. I also just have to tell you, so there was a prospects panel at Cubs convention. You kind of tell a lot from these guys just by how they interact with the crowd, how comfortable they're feeling, what they're talking about. I've never seen anyone more comfortable in that prospects panel than Matt Shaw. Like, he was talking about his philosophy on hitting, talking about what he's excited about, what he's not excited about. And the numbers back him up. Across two levels last year, AAA and AA, he had 523 plate appearances. He slashed 284, 379, 488 with a WRC plus of 146. He was actually a little bit better in AAA than he was in AA. He had 298 in AAA and he had 279 in AA. I think the kid is ready. I think he's ready right now. It's a 25, 30 home run bat potential, and he can run a bit. So he stole 31 bases in the minors last year. So I'm here for it. I'm excited. And the glove looks good too.
Yeah, I'm very pumped for it. I'm very mad that I didn't get more early cheap shares of Matt Shaw, because you do have to pay for it now. But for a position that if you decide to wait on third base, it's not a bad landing spot. If so, and I thought, like you mentioned John Birdie for maybe Nico Horner, I thought it was also good because Birdie can be there to help with Shaw if there's issues at third base and kind of play that super utility if needed type situation.
He definitely could, but I have to tell you, the attitude I was getting from Shaw when he was on stage reminded me of the, like, I don't think he's going down unless something is broken. Like, there's a confidence exuding from that kid. I don't think Major League Baseball is going to scare him at all.
So it's like Ryan Bloomfield at first pitch on the stage. I got it. Okay. Very confident with the mic in hand. All right. Miguel Amaya, we're going to go behind the dish here. I know we've talked about him a few years in a row now. Like, I think we like him more than production has given us so far when it's come to Miguel Amaya. But the bright side is it's still his job. They brought Carson Kelly in. He's there to back up unless I'm reading this wrong. Miguel Amaya's ADP is 311. What are your thoughts on Mr. Amaya this season?
Yeah. So I like Miguel Amaya. And I like what he did, especially towards the end of last season. But I gotta throw a little bit of cold water on the Miguel Amaya situation, because he really pulled most of his stats up in the second half last year. And specifically, he was kind of a beast in August. In August, he hit 318, 348, 576 with a WRC plus of 158. And that sounds amazing until you realize that, like, he's running that off a 327 BABIP. And the other month where he was pretty good was July, which he was running off a 367 BABIP. And those are just not numbers that he's ever put up before. To hear Cubs people talk about this, they say, oh, he changed his stance. There was a leg kick type of thing going on. I don't see it. Like, I just see a guy who got kind of lucky on balls in play, which leads me to the one guy who I'm fully prepared to become my favorite Cub, Moises Ballesteros, because I see a softness in the Cubs situation at catcher right now, where Kelly doesn't, I don't think Kelly's taking that job from anybody. No. If Amaya struggles, and we've seen more months of Amaya struggling than Amaya succeeding in Major League Baseball so far, I think Ballesteros has a hit tool that is going to challenge the front office to bring him up immediately. And it's going to be a weird situation because he's not actually that good of a defensive catcher yet, but the hit tool is legit, as we saw at the Arizona Fall League.
Yep. ADP 697 for Mr. Ballesteros. My thoughts on Ballesteros, and I do like the skill set, everything you mentioned, I agree with. I feel like the reason they bring a Carson Kelly in is you don't want to bring Ballesteros up to sit on the bench as a backup. So it's like you said, it has to be like, hey, Amaya, you're out of the way here. Kid's coming up to play. That's where I think it's what you said. But I'm trying to echo it to the listeners out there. It's like there's a path to him coming up, but it's not going to be sit on the bench, I don't think.
I agree with that.
So
I just want to stress again, I know they don't love his defense right now, but the hit tool is so good. It's very early Alejandro Kirk, where you're looking at a guy who might hit 300 and like, but with a lot of doubles, not a lot of home runs.
I was going to say, is he giving you your favorite Cubs player vibes or no?
Okay, so that same prospect panel that I was just talking about where Matt Shaw was so confident, Ballesteros was also on that panel. And he's kind of like up there. He's a little nerdy, actually, like, which I didn't expect. But one of the questions all of the Cubs were asked was who their inspiration was, like who had been a role model for them in the system. And Moises Ballesteros said Wilson Contreras, and then I didn't hear anything after that because I was just like living my dream.
When you were describing him as this hit tool that doesn't play defense, a prospect Cubs, I'm like, I don't know this. Like, she hasn't mentioned his name yet. How's this happened? Make too much sense. All right,
he does not have Wilson Contreras power, to be clear. Contreras has hit some of the longest home runs I've ever seen at Wrigley Field, and I don't think Ballesteros is going to do that.
Fair enough. Any other hitters we should be thinking about that might have an impact this season, or do you want to move to the mound?
The one guy I do kind of want to talk about a little bit, mainly because if these Nico injuries are more than we think they are, could matter, is James Triantos. Okay. I don't really love any of the utility guys that the Cubs have gone out and gotten this offseason. I mean, no offense to John Birdie. He's totally average and fine, and sometimes he runs a lot, and that's interesting. But, like, Vidal Brujan, no. Like, what is this? I mean, Gage Workman is a little bit interesting, and that's a Cubs pickup from the Rule 5 draft, so he either has to be on the roster or, you know, go back to Detroit. So there's some interesting things going on there, but I think James Triantos might be a more interesting hitter than all of those guys. And if Nico isn't ready to start the year, there's a non-zero chance that Triantos plays his way onto the team instead of like Gage Workman or Ben Cowles or, you know, insert one of the other utility guys that Jed Hoyer's in love with.
Okay. Yeah. 740 ADP there for Triantos. So another guy to keep an eye on. All right. Let's head to the mound. We're going to start with the man. Came on and made a huge impact in his rookie season with the Cubs. Shota Umanaga, just filthy. 15 wins and 29 starts, threw 173 innings. I made a lot of people surprised there. Sub-3 ERA, all groovy. ADP 76, and I'm still on board with all of it.
Same. I love what Shota did last year. The K minus walk numbers, which I know you and I both love as a metric to look at pitchers, are sick. They are elite even. And he does not walk, guys. Like, most of the walks that Shota gives up are the umpire making a mistake. He places pitches so perfectly, and that the tunnel he creates with that splitter and fastball, it breaks away from batters. It's unfair. When he's on, it's just unfair. So, I'm also still in on Shota. at that price. I think he might be my SP1 in a draft where I waited on pitching too long, but that's fine.
I don't hate that. I think I was watching Ryan's OC draft on Monday night, and I think someone started out with Shota in that one. Same theory, that you just wait and go with it and see what happens. Yeah. All right, another pitcher that we've loved for a long time, but it's been an injury situation. First time was a hamstring, which happens. I'm not worried about it. But then the forearm towards the end of the season slowed things down a lot for Justin Steele. The overall stat line is pretty good, but that innings pitched is not what you were hoping for with him. ADP is still 123 this year, and I haven't really heard a whole lot. Like, Oliver's, yeah, he's been ready for spring training. But, like, what's the situation with what took place there? I'm curious because I love him, but I've had a tough time drafting him so far.
Well, the forearm situation, I'm much more worried about than the hamstring. Because yes. Justin Steele is as a Tommy John surgery guy. I think he had Tommy John in, like, 2015 or 2016. Obviously recovered from it, but that is not the first time that he's had a forearm shut him down for a few weeks. It happened in 2023. It happened in 2024. And we both know what a forearm strain precludes. So it's just not, precludes. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's not good. And I hope I'm wrong, because I love watching Justin Steele pitch. He's one of my favorite pitchers to watch. I'm with you. The innings pitched is a little bit scary. Assuming he's healthy, I think he's as solid of a number two as any team in baseball. And I'm not sure about the health.
Yep, I'm with you. Because, yeah, healthy, I'd take him at 123 all day long, not even think about it. But there's nothing that makes me feel warm and fuzzy about the health.
I will tell you one interesting thing about Justin Steele from CubsCon, though. So on the pitcher panel, he talked about the fact that he has just kept throwing this offseason. He did not shut down the way a lot of pitchers are. And he's working with some coaches. Like, obviously he's not throwing as much as he does in the regular season or as hard, but he's working with some guys right now who basically are trying to make the case that that shutdown startup is where all of the injury risk happens. And so they'd rather that you sort of keep a level workload and then accelerate it later. So I don't know if that's going to work or not, but it does seem like he's trying something new this offseason, and that's worth keeping an eye on.
It makes sense. We'll see where it goes. But it does make sense. Like, for anyone that, you know, goes to the gym after not going to the gym for a long time, those first few days, a little sore, yeah, getting back into things, kind of makes a little sense. But we're also not professional athletes. Jameson Taillon, who you mentioned, he's just the boring veteran. He throws innings. Ratios are usually not horrific. They're actually really good last year. Doesn't strike out a lot of guys. So it's kind of, what are you looking for in your drafts? ADP is 341. What are your thoughts on Taillon going another spin with the Cubs?
I mean, I like him at that draft price because he's going to throw enough innings to get you wins, and wins are really hard to get in this game. Mm-hmm. I hate the strikeout numbers, mm-hmm, and I'm really wary of the home-away splits from last season. Wary enough that last season I drafted quite a bit of Jameson Taillon just as one of those, like, safe, I can get some wins at the back end of a draft type of pitchers. I am less confident about that this year, just because I think a lot of what you're seeing in the ratios was because of the park effects at Wrigley. And I don't know why. I don't think those park effects are sticky. I think those park effects were a one-year anomaly.
Yep. No, he's great for me in, like, deeper formats just to get the innings and see where it goes. But man, the strikeouts, no bueno for sure. Matthew Boyd, this was an exciting early move in the offseason. Boyd, missed a lot of time with injuries in recent years, came back and threw 39 innings, almost 40 innings for the Guardians last year, and looked really, really good, like Boyd of old type stuff. Again, super small sample, but we'll see where it can go from there. ADP's 315, taking a chance on Matthew Boyd.
I am, and you know what it reminds me of? Spencer Turnbull going to the Phillies last year and just kind of rolling. And I actually think it's going to have a similar cadence. Like, I don't think Matthew Boyd's going to throw 150, 160 innings. He just hasn't been built up that way. But if he's on a roll to start the season, he's doing really well. The Cubs are just going to let him do that until he's not doing it anymore. And you kind of want to get in on that early. The other thing I'll say about that, and this holds true for all of these pitchers, Wrigley plays less hitter friendly in the colder months. So these are the types of guys that you can pick up and then you can drop them when it warms up at Wrigley. And you're like, oh, I'm not really into Jameson Taillon anymore, but Jameson Taillon in April might be great. You know what I mean? So Matthew Boyd in that limited sample, being ready to drop him when it turns to, like, when it turns to dust. I'm into it. I also, the last thing I'll say there, Dan Zimbrowski's zip system really liked Matthew Boyd. Like I was stunned how much Zips liked Matthew Boyd.
Interesting. I wonder what formula he's using differently. So I like Boyd, but I wonder what he's using to stand out so much. That's a,
yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's the secret sauce, but
what it comes down to with Boyd is just how many innings does he go? Like I'm thinking like 130 would be amazing. That'd be sweet. We'll see where that goes, but it's the old theory, get what you can get. And if, at that ADP, drop him when he's done. That's what it comes down to. All right now, Roster Resource and other talking heads have said the Cubs might have a six-man rotation. I still think it won't be. I think there's getting depth because of maybe the innings with Boyd, and then maybe steals just, you know, insurance to have arms type stuff. So you have Javier Assad and you have Colin Ray. Colin Ray coming over from the Brewers, of course. And Assad was very serviceable, not a strikeout guy by any means. Colin Ray's kind of similar. Both of them, like if you look at the underlying metrics, you think they're going to get blown up at the moment's notice. They get the job done. Assad's ADP 605, Ray's is 620. What are your thoughts for them with the Cubs, what the plan might be for this season? Or maybe they're going six-man and I'm wrong.
Well, I don't think they're going to ever call it a six-man rotation, but I'm going to read between the lines a little bit of what Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins were talking about at Cubs convention. They were just talking about how you needed so many more pitchers to get through the season than you used to. And if you recall last year, Shota, like his first seven starts or something, was dealing. And then there was a rainout in St. Louis on his day. And instead of having him just pitch the next day, they just gave him a whole week off and then they started again. That was actually kind of the end of Shota's magic early season run. I was pretty cranky about it. But the reason they did that is because they were trying to make sure he never pitched on 4 days rest. Like they were really big on getting him the rest that he needed. And I just think they're going to be a lot more cautious about that, which means because they have this depth of like Ray and Boyd and Assad, Cody Poteet can start a game here or there. I just would not be stunned at all if what they wind up doing eventually, it basically is a six-man rotation, even though they never call it that. That last spot just kind of rotates in and out based on matchups and who's in Iowa and who's not in Iowa. They have a lot of guys who can fill that spot. And I think the days of like the Cubs having anyone close to 200 innings are kind of over.
No, and that makes sense. Like you mentioned, most teams need 8 to 9 starters every year. That's just the reality of the situation. Cubs are trying to compete, get these guys on the cheap. They've proven they can get you 100 plus innings. It makes sense. Is there any other pitchers in the Cubs system we could take a look at? Because I really want to know your thoughts on guys like Wicks and Brown, and if you even want Killian, because we saw all of them at times last year. And now with these additions of a Boyd and a Ray, it kind of pushes them back a little farther.
Yeah, it does. So a couple of guys. Wicks I like a lot, but he's also in that sort of like six-man Iowa shuttle type of situation. Change-up specialist. I actually think his K numbers are probably a little higher upside than Assad or Ray, but he probably starts after them just because of where he is in his career. The guy I'm really keeping an eye on is Cade Horton. Cade Horton got shut down with a shoulder injury last season, but all signs are that he's healthy again. And if that's true, I think he gets a shot to make this rotation. He might be the highest upside pitcher that they have in the minors right now. And then Ben Brown is really fascinating to me because I know he started last year and he looked pretty good doing it, but I have heard from people both in and outside of Cubs land who really think he could be a lockdown reliever. And, you know, they just traded for Presley. Porter Hodge was really good last year. But if you have a guy who can be one of those like elite high leverage relief type options, and you already have 9 or 10 starters, I don't know why you wouldn't try that at some point in time. I think Killian is probably destined for maybe a spot start here and there and more like middle innings relief work. Brown, I'm really curious to see what they do with Brown because the injury that he had last year was so weird. It was like they called it a neck lesion, and I don't know what that means. I just wonder if they decide that they might be able to keep him healthier in the bullpen, given the number of arms that they have.
Yeah, no. I remember when Brown kind of came on to start, I either went to AAA or he had a minor injury and came back. And the whole rumblings was, let's put him in the back of the bullpen. And that was even started last year before Porter Hodge kind of took that over type conversation. And then Brown really never came back from that neck lesion situation. So, yeah, that could be a way to get his arm out there for sure. So, for those keeping track at home, though, Cade Horton, 598 ADP, Ben Brown, 423, Jordan Wicks, 706, if you're taking some shots later on. We hit most of the prospects, I think, but are there any other ones you wanted to mention before we get towards the end here?
No, I think that we have covered the guys that I am keeping an eye on.
Sounds good. All right, then the final question I have for you here. What are your expectations for the 2025 Chicago Cubs? Realistic expectations. I have to clarify that because we're all homers, because I have people that actually are fans on the show. Realistic expectations.
I mean, I don't know how much of a fangirl of this Cubs regime I am. I'm pretty much the loudest. Well,
I know
loudest,
you're a huge Jed Hoyer fan. Huge. I know.
Loudest critic of what Jed Hoyer has put together on the internet. This is a better team than last year. Kyle Tucker in place of Cody Bellinger alone just makes it a much deeper lineup, and I think changes the complexion of the team quite a bit. I also think the Brewers lost some guys who are pretty, you know, who are big for them. And I don't see anybody in the division, like the Reds aren't really stepping it up. The Pirates aren't really stepping it up. The Cardinals, I don't know what the Cardinals are even doing. They kind of look like they're in a rebuild. And that, you want to talk about a pitching staff that does not inspire fear. I'm like, what is this?
I did that show earlier this week. And all I have to say is, for those that have not listened to that show yet, Matt Thompson has one of the funniest things to say about Miles Mikolas I have ever heard. It made me literally sit back from my chair and laugh. He compared him to a union worker that just shows up and punches in and punches out and doesn't care what he does during the day. It was like, it was perfect. It made so much sense. So much sense. And that's most of the rotation, to your point. Yes.
Yeah. And so I think that the Brewers probably lose a few wins next year. And I think the Cubs probably gain 5 or 6. And I think that puts the two head-to-head really close. They are built radically differently. I don't know exactly how that's going to play out, but I think the Cubs have a shot to win the division. I think they have a shot to get a wild card spot. I think that this Cubs team, though, is going to frustrate people in the sense that you'd want to see a guy like Kyle Tucker extended, and like, you know, he's your dude for the future, instead of trying to play it out and see what happens. You'd want to have a little bit more clarity on the catcher situation. I'm not sold on Miguel Amaya as like your starting catcher for a playoff contending team. I'd want to see, I'm pretty sold on Matt Shaw. Like, I think Matt Shaw is going to be great. I'm less sold on who's going to back up Nico Horner and how that's going to go. So I don't know. I give this team a solid B+, and I think they'll be in playoff contention as long as everyone is healthy. I really wish they had signed a starting pitcher to push Shota and Steele down. Like, I think if they had signed like Corbin Burns, I'd be all in on this team, because Shota is your number two, Steele is your number three. And then you're like talking about this Boyd, Assad, Ray mix in the five spot rather than like the three spot. Just makes me feel a lot better.
Well, on the bright side is we are recording this a little early before release date. They have been rumored to try to be trading for like a Michael King and some others. So there might be something else that drops to add to that depth of starting rotation. And I totally blew past it, so we're going to backtrack for 2 seconds here. You did acquire Ryan Pressly. We kind of talked about it briefly when we're talking those pitchers, but let's hit on this real quick. So you guys acquired Ryan Pressly because apparently the Astros love just trading players with you guys. And you had Porter Hodge coming off a big year. How do you see this playing out? Because the words out of Presley's mouth at his press conference was he's going to get a lot of the work, but it's also they're going to make one heck of a tandem in the back of the bullpen, which A, he probably needs to say with a young arm there, but B, Presley's like overall skill set has deteriorated over the last 3 years. Still good, but not this like elite guy as old.
Yeah, I've got a piece in the queue over at Baseball HQ looking at the NL Central that talks about just this situation. So look for that sometime this week. I think Porter Hodge is the better pitcher at this point in time than Ryan Pressly. Porter Hodge put up, like a 31.4% strikeout rate last year. Pressly used to have strikeout rates in that low 30s range, but last season it was 23.6%. The season before that, it was 27.some odd%. So that number has been tailing off as time goes on. Father Time is undefeated. He comes for all of us. And I think that Pressly gives the Cubs experience in the back end of the bullpen and peace of mind if Hodge should falter, because they did wind up in a situation last year where Alzolay was in over his head. Honestly, I think he was hurt and just couldn't quite perform the same way he had in 2023. And then Neris never really stepped up into that role in the way that they thought he might be able to. Presley is a better pitcher as of right now, to my mind, than Neris was coming in with the Cubs last year. So it's like a slightly better situation. But this is also why part of me thinks Ben Brown winds up in the back end of that pen, because if Hodge should falter, and that wouldn't surprise anyone, and Presley struggles even a little bit at all, they're going to need someone who can just get outs in the eighth or ninth, and Ben Brown might be that guy.
Love it. Okay, good speculating there. Don't give up on Porter Hodge, everybody. It's just the way the world works these days in the closing situations.
But it is a committee. It's like a it's like a Phillies-esque committee, and I do not feel comfortable with any of those guys as one of my like top two closers.
Yep. No, it's going to be very frustrating, but in the Fab world, could be fun from time to time, and we'll see where it goes from there. And heck, maybe they can both pick up 15 to 20 saves on the way to the NL Central Championship. All right. Before we head out of here, Sarah, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on, because you are busy, busy, busy.
I am these days, but that's good. I'd rather
it's
be
very good.
Bored. Mostly over at Blue Sky at BCB Sarah. You can also find me on a handful of other social media places here and again at BCB underscore Sarah. My Cubs writing is at bleedcubbyblue.com. I'm writing 2+ times a week over there. And then my fantasy writing is at baseballhq.com. And then, of course, second season of Fantasy Feud. First episode should drop, I think, tomorrow, with Shelly over at the Pitcherless Podcast Network. And I will be hanging out at PitchCon this weekend with all of our friends from Pitcherless. So make sure you check out PitchCon if you have some free time this weekend.
Most definitely. Check it all out. Have some fun. Make sure you're following Sarah on whatever platform you're on, because she's awesome as always. And I appreciate you joining my friend. Always great to catch up with you.
Yeah, same to you.
All right, everybody. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 730, your 2025 Chicago Cubs team preview. Catch y'all next time.